Dhamma is the teaching. So the highest teaching is called Abhidhamma. Abhidhamma deals only with ultimate realities, not conventional truth. And what is ultimate realities and what is conventional truth? Conventional truth is ordinary conceptual thought, like tree, house, table, persons, beings, and so on. It seems to exist, but do not exist as irreducible realities. For example, I would like to give you a practical example. When you practice four elements systematically, you listen your body, four elements, from the head up to the soul. When your concentration becomes deeper and approaching excess concentration, or we call upachara samadhi, then you can see your whole body become transparent. Become like an ice block, and the whole body emits light when you reach excess concentration. Then, at that time, you can see your body break down into thousands of billions of particles. We call rupa kalapa. Then, with the help of your concentration, excess concentration, you can penetrate into each particle, and you can see each particle contains eight elements. They are earth element, water element, fire element, wind element, and color, smell, taste, and nutritive accent. These eight are the final, irreducible components of existence. It cannot be smaller than it. So these eight are called ultimate realities. The body is only concept or conventional truth. So when you see all this, when you reach excess concentration, then you can penetrate each particle into its ultimate reality as consists of eight elements. Then you pay attention again to the external things, either mountain, house, table. Then you also can see all these mountain, house, table are made up of four elements. Then you see the four elements will break up into particles. Then all this particle consists of eight elements which I have mentioned just now. But the external one, that eight elements are bound by temperature. So it's temperature bound. This can be realized by practical, by practice of meditation. Okay. So now you understand what's conventional truth. Then ultimate truth. Things that really exist by reason of their own intrinsic nature, or Pali we call sabhava. They are the final irreducible components of existence, just as I have mentioned the eight elements in each rupa kalapa, and consciousness as well. Consciousness, mental factors, nibbana are all called ultimate realities, which are the final and irreducible components. So Abhidhamma only deal with this ultimate truth or ultimate realities. There are four. You can see your hand up. Number one is consciousness. In Pali we call citta. Number two is mental factors or cetasika. Number three is matter, rupa. Number four, nibbana. These are the only four ultimate truths discussed in Abhidhamma. Let us go little go one by one. What is consciousness? Many people think consciousness is I. They identify consciousness as I. What's the meaning of consciousness? Consciousness is defined as pure awareness of an object, or pure knowing an object, or the process of cognizing the object. This is called consciousness. That's all. Just pure awareness of an object. That's all. It's called consciousness. And no consciousness will arise without taking any object. What are the objects of consciousness? Consciousness takes six types of objects. Number one is visible object. Second, sound. Third, smell. Fourth, taste. Five, tangible objects. Number six, mental objects. Mental objects including consciousness itself, matter, remaining matter, and mental factors, concept, and nibbana. I give an example. How the consciousness take mental factor as object? When you're practicing mindfulness of breathing, anapanasati, when your concentration is deep, you know, concentration become deeper and deeper, you can see nimitta appear under your nostril. Nimitta, light, very brilliant light, like ruby, you know, like crystal, appear under your nostril. So at the time you pay attention on this, you pay attention to this nimitta, then your mind sink into that nimitta, you know, sink into that, in the absorbed in that nimitta. Then you cannot see the body, cannot hear the sound. At that time, if you can absorb into that nimitta continuously for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours without any interruption, then you enter into absorption. We call jhana. So you stay in the jhana for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. After that, you emerge from the jhana. Then you listen your heart base here, you can see the bhanga and the heart base here. You can see the jhana factors. There are five jhana factors in first jhana. Number one is vitaka, applied thought. Number two, sustained thought, vichara. Number three, piti, joy. Number four, sukha, happiness. And number fifth, ekagata, one-pointedness. So these five are mental factors. So when you pay attention, you can see one by one appear. So when your mind concentrates on this, vitaka, applied thought, vichara, sustained thought, piti, joy, sukha, happiness, ekagata, one-pointedness, then these mental factors become the object of your consciousness. So this is how the mental factors become the object of consciousness. Okay? Then concept. How the consciousness aware of the concept? For example, as I have said, you concentrate your mind. Dhamma is the teaching. So the higher teaching is called Abhidhamma. Abhidhamma deals only with ultimate realities, not conventional truth. And what is ultimate realities and what is conventional truth? Conventional truth is ordinary conceptual thought, like tree, house, table, persons, beings, and so on. It seems to exist, but do not exist as irreducible rarities. For example, I would like to give you a practical example. When you practice four elements systematically, you listen your body, four elements, from the head up to the soul. As you As when your concentration becomes deeper and approaching excess concentration, or we call Upachara Samadhi, then you can see your whole body become transparent, become like an ice block, and the whole body emits light when you reach excess concentration. Then, at that time, you can see your body break down into thousands of billions of particles. We call Rupa Kalapa. Then with the help of your concentration, excess concentration, you can penetrate into each particle and you can see each particle contains 8 elements. They are earth element, water element, fire element, wind element, and color, smell, taste, and nutritive accent. These 8 are the final, irreducible components of existence. It cannot be smaller than it. So these 8 are called ultimate realities. The body is only concept or conventional truth. So when you see all this, when you reach excess concentration, then you can penetrate each particles into its ultimate reality as consists of 8 elements. Then you pay attention again to the external things, others, mountain, house, table. Then you also can see all this mountain, house, table are made up of 4 elements. Then you see the 4 elements will break up into particles. Then all these particles consist of 8 elements which I have mentioned just now. But the external one, that 8 elements are bound by temperature. So it's temperature bond. This can be realized by practical, by practice of meditation. Okay, so now you understand what's conventional truth. Then ultimate truth, things that really exist by reason of their own intrinsic nature, or Pali we call sabhava. They are the final irreducible components of existence, just as I have mentioned the 8 elements in each Rupa Kalapa, and consciousness as well. Consciousness, mental factors, Nibbana are all called ultimate realities, which are the final and irreducible components. So Abhidhamma only deal with this ultimate truth or ultimate realities. There are 4. You can see your hand up. Number 1 is consciousness. In Pali we call citta. Number 2 is mental factors or cetasika. Number 3 is matter, rupa. Number 4 nibbana. These are the only 4 ultimate truths discussed in Abhidhamma. Let us go one by one. What is consciousness? Many people think consciousness is I. They identify consciousness as I. What is the meaning of consciousness? Consciousness is defined as pure awareness of an object, or pure knowing an object, or the process of cognizing the object. This is called consciousness. That's all. Just pure awareness of an object. That's all. It's called consciousness. And no consciousness will arise without taking any object. What are the objects of consciousness? Consciousness takes 6 types of objects. Number 1 is visible object. 2, sound. 3, smell. 4, taste. 5, tangible objects. Number 6, mental objects. Mental objects including consciousness itself, matter, remaining matter, and mental factors, concept, and nibbana. I give an example. How the consciousness take mental factor as object? When you're practicing mindfulness of breathing, anapanasati, when your concentration is deep, you know, concentration become deeper and deeper, you can see nimitta appear under your nostril. Nimitta, light, very brilliant light, like ruby, you know, like crystal, appear under your nostril. So, at the time you pay attention on this, you pay attention to this nimitta, then your mind sink into that nimitta. You know, sink into that, in the absorbed in that nimitta. Then you cannot see the body, cannot hear the sound. At the time, if you can absorb into that nimitta continuously for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours without any interruption, then you enter into absorption. We call jhana. So you stay in the jhana for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. After that, you emerge from the jhana. Then you listen, your heart base here, you can see the bhanga and the heart base here. You can see the jhana factors. There are 5 jhana factors in first jhana. Number 1 is vitakka, apply thought. Number 2, sustain thought, vichara. Number 3, piti, joy. Number 4, sukha, happiness. And number 5, ekagata, one-pointedness. So this 5 are mental factors. So when you pay attention, you can see one by one appear. So when your mind concentrate on this, vitakka, apply thought, vichara, sustain thought, piti, joy, sukha, happiness, ekagata, one-pointedness, then this mental factors become the object of your consciousness. So this is how the mental factors become the object of consciousness. Okay? Then concept. How the consciousness aware of the concept? For example, as I have said, you concentrate your mind on this patibhaga nimitta, this transparent crystal light. This patibhaga nimitta is concept. And when you concentrate on the air is also concept. So this is how the consciousness taking concept as object. Is it clear? Okay. Then nibbana. What consciousness taking nibbana? Not ordinary consciousness, only supramundane consciousness taking nibbana as object. I will explain later. Okay. So all consciousness, no consciousness will arise without taking an object. And in one snap of finger, 1,000 billion of consciousness arise and pass away. You must bear in mind this, you know. One snap of finger, thousand billions of consciousness arise and pass away. So how quick, how rapid, how thick is the consciousness, then you will know. Then consciousness arises one after another. One arises, pass away, followed by another, arise, pass away. And consciousness never arises without association with mental factors. Although consciousness arises, pass away, you know, singly, but it must it's all the time associated with mental factors. No consciousness can arise without association of mental factors. Okay. Then consciousness can be classified by way of nature and plane. How? By way of nature, there are 4. You can see your hand. By way of nature. Number 1, unwholesome consciousness. Consciousness can be classified by way of nature as unwholesome consciousness, wholesome consciousness, resultant consciousness, and functional consciousness. What is unwholesome consciousness? In Abhidhamma, we have 12 unwholesome consciousness, rooted either in greed, hatred, or delusion. So consciousness, the consciousness which accompanied by either one or two of greed, hatred, and delusion is called unwholesome consciousness. Like killing, stealing, telling lies, sexual misconduct, all these actions, unwholesome actions, are prompted by unwholesome consciousness rooted in greed, hatred, and delusion. And number two is wholesome consciousness. We call kusala citta, wholesome consciousness. Sorry, and why is called unwholesome? Because it's mentally unhealthy, morally blameworthy, and productive of painful result. That's why it's called unwholesome. Now we go to wholesome. Wholesome consciousness are rooted in non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, either one or two. And it's called wholesome because it's productive of pleasant results. In Abhidhamma, we have 21 wholesome consciousness. For example, when you perform generosity, you're keeping your precepts, all are prompted by wholesome consciousness. And jhana consciousness is also wholesome consciousness. Path consciousness is also wholesome consciousness. So all are 21. These two wholesome consciousness and unwholesome consciousness constitute karma. These two constitute karma. And the result of these two are called resultant consciousness. That's number three. The result of unwholesome and wholesome consciousness are called resultant consciousness. Eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose are all resultant consciousness. Rebirth consciousness is also resultant consciousness. The first moment of conception, rebirth consciousness, is also resultant consciousness because of past life karma. Okay. Then number four, functional consciousness. Functional consciousness involves pure activities. There's no that karmically indeterminate. No karma involved. So resultant and functional both are karmically indeterminate. No karma involved. Okay. Then usually for Arahant, the consciousness of Arahant is functional consciousness, because Arahant has already uprooted all the refoulements. There's no karma involved. Okay, now we go to... So, consciousness can be classified by way of nature as unwholesome consciousness, wholesome consciousness, resultant consciousness, and functional consciousness. And consciousness is also can be classified by way of plane. There are four. Sense sphere consciousness, five material sphere consciousness, immaterial sphere consciousness, and supramundane consciousness. What are the sense sphere consciousness? We have 31 realms of existence, or 31 planes of existence. This 31 is we call one universal. In Buddhist teaching, we call one universal is this 31. So, the lower one we call sense sphere plane, consists of 11 planes, 4 woeful plane and 7 sensual blissful plane. So this 11 we call sense sphere plane. So sense sphere consciousness are the consciousness mostly moved about in this 11 plane. Is connected with 5 external sense objects, like sound, visible form, sound, taste, tongue, and tangible object are connected with five external objects, and mostly move about in this 11th plane. It's called sense sphere consciousness. And five material sphere consciousness are the consciousness mostly move about in 16 five material sphere plane. Do you see? 16. So five material consciousness are the consciousness mostly move about in this 16 five material sphere plane. But it doesn't mean that it cannot occur. It doesn't mean that five material sphere consciousness cannot arise in sense sphere plane. For example, for human beings in sense sphere plane, if you practice mindfulness of breathing, you achieve first absorption, first jhana. At that moment, your mental stream is called five material sphere consciousness arise in your mental stream. And for those who want to reborn in five material sphere plane, the beings who reside in five material sphere plane we call Brahma. If anybody want to reborn in this 16 five material sphere plane, they have to practice jhana, absorption, concentration. If you achieve first jhana, then at that moment you pass away, then you are sure to be reborn in first jhana plane. But for those who have jhana, but during dying moment, he cannot enter into jhana anymore, then he cannot reborn in five material sphere plane. Okay. And for to achieve five material sphere consciousness, we have to concentrate on a material object we call rupa. That's why we call rupa jhana. In order to achieve this five material sphere consciousness, we have to concentrate on the material object like earth kasina, water kasina, yellow kasina, white kasina, and so on. Then you achieve jhana. Then at that time, your mental stream is five material sphere consciousness. And number three, immaterial sphere consciousness. Immaterial sphere consciousness are the consciousness mostly move about in immaterial sphere plane. Only four. There are four immaterial sphere plane. So to achieve this immaterial sphere consciousness, one have to focus upon non-materiality object like infinity of space. You pay attention, but in order to achieve fine immaterial sphere consciousness, first you have to start with kasina first. After you achieve first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, by contemplating on earth kasina, then you emerge from the fourth jhana. After you emerge from the fourth jhana, when you are in the fourth jhana, at that time, the 10 directions of the earth become earth. So your mind absorbs into the earth. Then you enter into first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. After emerging from the fourth jhana, then you pay attention on the space in the earth. The space, the small hole in the earth. When your concentration is good, then the earth disappear. What remains is boundless space. So you pay attention, space, 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 then you enter into arupa jhana, immaterial sphere consciousness. So this is how one achieves immaterial sphere consciousness, by concentrating on non-material object like space, consciousness or nothingness, or neither perception nor non-perception. So, although in material sphere consciousness are the consciousness mostly move about in material sphere plane, but it also can arise in human plane for those who have arupa jhana. Okay. Now we go to the supramundane consciousness. Supramundane consciousness transcends five aggregates. And supramundane consciousness taking nibbana as object. There are eight supramundane consciousness. For example, stream entry or sotapanna path, sotapanna fruition, maga phala, sotapanna maga phala. All these are supramundane consciousness taking nibbana as object. And what's the difference between path consciousness and fruition consciousness? I think most of you know maga phala, sotapanna maga phala. But do you know what's the difference between maga and phala? What's the difference between path and fruition? Do you know? No. Okay. The function of path consciousness is to uproot defilement, or to eliminate defilement, to eradicate defilement. And the function of fruition consciousness is to experience the taste of liberation after the defilement has been uprooted. Is it clear? And the path consciousness only arises one moment, one thought, one consciousness moment, then never arise again. Although it arises only one time, but it's so powerful that it can eradicate the defilement, which will lead us to the four woeful states. And the path consciousness penetrates into four noble truths. The moment path consciousness arises, it penetrates into four noble truths. So only sotapanna, only stream enterer can understand practically what's four noble truths by this path consciousness. And the fruition consciousness experience the taste of freedom after the defilement has been eradicated. And the fruition consciousness for the first time, when the first time you achieve sotapanna maga phala, path consciousness arises one, followed by two moments of fruition consciousness. But after that, if you repeat again, the fruition consciousness can last for 1 hour, 2 hours. You enter into phala samapatti. Have you heard phala samapatti? This only for Arya person, for noble person. After they have seen nibbana, they can enter into phala samapatti, taking nibbana as object. So at that time, fruition consciousness arise, pass away, continuously for 1 hour, taking nibbana as object. If you don't understand, no problem. When you reach sotapanna, you will understand. Okay. Okay. So roughly you understand what's the meaning of consciousness. Now we go to mental factors. Cetasika. We have 52 cetasika. What's the cetasika? The cetasika are the mental phenomena that arise and perish together with consciousness, and have the same base and same object as consciousness. So you must remember the four characteristics of mental factors. First, it must arise together with consciousness. Then it must perish together with consciousness. It takes the same object. If the consciousness takes sound, mental factors also take sound, and it has the same base. If the consciousness arises depending on the heart base, mental factors also will arise depending on the heart base. If the eye consciousness arises depending on the eye sensitivity, the mental factors also will arise depending on the eye sensitivity. So same base with the consciousness. Okay, four characteristics. And what is the importance of these mental factors? What are the mental factors? Many people don't understand mental factors. We have 52 mental factors. Some are wholesome mental factors. 25 are beautiful mental factors. 14 are unwholesome. And 7 are called universal. 7 universal of mental factors which must arise together with all consciousness, whether it's unwholesome, wholesome, resultant, or functional. These 7. So what are the mental factors? I give some example. Mindfulness is mental factors. Feeling, Vedana, is mental factors. Wisdom is mental factor. One-pointedness is mental factor. Now, compassion is mental factors. Jealousy is also mental factors. Then energy, volition, equanimity, non-hatred, greed, and delusion, all are mental factors. We all, very often we identify this mental factor as I, myself. My concentration is good. Actually, concentration is only mental factor. But we identify it with I. Oh, today I'm not mindful. No? So we identify mindfulness as I, as myself. This wrong view. No, mindfulness is only mental factors arise, play, perform its function, then pass away. Your wisdom is very sharp. It's not your wisdom. It's only your mental factor of wisdom is well developed only. Then, now, what is the importance of mental factors? How mental factor helps consciousness in the total act of connection? I will give practical example. No? How the mental factors help the consciousness? For example, when you are enjoying the taste of your food. So the consciousness, what is the meaning of consciousness? Consciousness taking the taste as object. Then associated by feeling, by the mental factors of feeling. Every consciousness must be associated with feeling. This feeling, the mental factors of feeling, perform the function of experiencing the desirable aspect of the taste. And the mental factors of perception persist of making a sign, or marking, or making a sign that this taste is the same as what I have experienced before. This is the function of perception. And the volition is organize all associated mental factors in acting upon that object, in acting upon that taste. And this volition accumulate karma. That's why Buddha say, volition means karma. And the mental factors of greed, grasping the taste, don't want to let go. So you keep on enjoying because of this mental factor of greed, keep on grasping the object. Just like a meat, sticky, like a meat stick on the hot pan. Don't want to give up, don't want to let go. This is the mental factors of greed, how it performs its function. Then the mental factors of wrong view perform the function of pre-assume that it's I who enjoy the taste. The mental factor of wrong view pre-assume that this myself, I enjoy the taste. and the mental factors of delusion conceal the nature of the taste as impermanent suffering and non-self. Because of that concealment, the delusion see it as the mental factor of delusion see the taste as permanent, as happiness and that self inside. So this is how the mental factors help the consciousness in the whole process of enjoying the taste. Just like the gear in the car, the gas in the car, the steering in the car help the car to move forward. So the mental factors help the consciousness in the total act of connection, in the total action of enjoying the taste. Is it clear? Okay. Without these mental factors, for example, the seven universal, without the seven, these mental factors, consciousness cannot consist of an object. The whole thought process cannot take place without the help of mental factors. And the consciousness can be compared as pure water. But the mental factors can be compared as dye, different color of dye. So when you put black dye into pure water, it becomes black color. The water becomes black. If you put yellow dye into pure water, it becomes yellow. So the seduced the consciousness to become evil or good. So far, any question? Difficult to digest. That's why it's called Abhidhamma. So now we go to the number third ultimate truth. There is matter, or we call rupa. There are 28 kinds of rupa. Why is called rupa? Because it is deformed by cold, heat, hunger, thirst, wind, and creeping things. And there are four primary elements: earth element, water element, temperature, and wind element. These are four primary elements, and depend on these four elements, there are 24 material phenomena. Depending on these four primary elements, what are the 24? For example, eye sensitivity, ear sensitivity, nose sensitivity, sex. Female sex, male sex, sound, taste, sound, taste, nutriment, life faculty, all are derived material phenomena, depend on the four elements. And we have said that consciousness arises one after another, one by one. But rupa or matter arises in a group, not one by one, in a group. We call rupa kalapa. In the beginning, I have told you, one rupa kalapa consists 8 elements. This is the minimum. Some rupa kalapa has 10 elements, some has 11, some has 12. And the lifespan of one unit of rupa is equal to 17 moments of consciousness. 17 times 17 moments of consciousness arise, pass away. Then one lifespan of rupa finished. So rupa is more slower. Consciousness is faster. Okay. And because rupa arises in combination, that's why we can see our hand. Because a group together, we can see our hand. But consciousness arises one by one, that's why we cannot see. Huh? And what's the connection between consciousness? Consciousness and mental factors we call nama, rupa, nama rupa, or mind and matter. The combination of mental factors and consciousness we call mind. What is the connection matter to mind? How it connect to mind? As what I have said, all consciousness must no consciousness can arise without taking an object. So the object of consciousness, one of the object of consciousness is matter. And no consciousness can arise without depend on the heart base or eye sensitivity, ear sensitivity. No consciousness can arise without depending on matter and except immaterial sphere consciousness. Arupa, immaterial, there's no material. Except that consciousness arise without depending on any base. All consciousness arise depending on heart base or five sense organ. So this is the connection between mind and matter. Okay, now we go to last one, Nibbana. Nibbana is the extinction of greed, hatred and delusion, and the state of final deliverance from the suffering inherent in conditioned existence. So Nibbana is unconditioned Dhamma. Consciousness, mental factors and rupa, matter is conditioned Dhamma. Nibbana is unconditioned Dhamma. And why is it important to study all this consciousness, mental factors and matter? Why is this so important? You have to pay so close attention to listen to it. Why is this so important? Because mental factors, consciousness, mental factors and matter, these three are the object of insight meditation. And these three are the tooth of suffering, which must be fully understood by inside knowledge. If you want to understand the truth of suffering practically, not theoretically. As Buddha say in Namacakkappavattana Sutta, the first discourse after enlightenment, Buddha say, what is suffering? Dukkha, dukkha satcha. What is suffering? Then Buddha say, in short, five aggregates of clinging is suffering. What is five aggregates? Aggregates of materiality, aggregate of feeling, aggregate of perception, aggregate of formation, and aggregate of consciousness. So, aggregate of materiality equal to matter, rupa. Then aggregate of perception, feeling and formation equal to mental factors. And aggregate of consciousness equal to consciousness. So five aggregates equal to nama rupa. Same meaning, different words only. And Buddha said these are the truth of suffering. And the truth of suffering must be fully understood by inside knowledge. So that's why it's important to study this. And it's the subject, it's the object of inside knowledge. When you reach vipassana, your object is only ultimate reality, no more conventional truth. So if you see your hand like that, you think lifting, you see your hand, this is not vipassana. Hand is not ultimate reality. But the particles, even the particle is not ultimate reality. The eight elements inside that particles is ultimate reality. And this is the object of your meditation, inside meditation or vipassana. What's the meaning of vipassana? The meaning of vipassana is to see the ultimate reality together with their causes as impermanent, non-self and suffering. So before we see impermanent, non-self and suffering of ultimate reality, is it necessary to understand what is ultimate reality first? Is it necessary to understand first before we see their impermanent, suffering and non-self? Is it necessary? Yes? That's why it's important to know this. If you meditate, if you practice vipassana meditation, concentrate on the conventional truth, you will never reach nibbana. So you must be careful when you practice vipassana meditation. If you only not this impermanent, you only practice vipassana based on conventional truth, then you will never reach nibbana. So you check yourself. If you say you are practicing vipassana meditation, you check yourself. Your object, is it ultimate realities or conventional truth? Now you already understand what are the ultimate realities. Only four. What are they? Water is rupa, okay? Then? Okay, this, rupa. Then another two? Okay. I said this. What else? This only matter, not matter. Consciousness also. You know? If you meditate only on the rupa, no consciousness, no mental factors, you also cannot achieve nibbana. Because the first insight knowledge, we have 16 stages of insight knowledge. The first insight knowledge we call analyzing of mind and matter. So if you only concentrate on the matter, you know, fire element, water element, and so on and so forth, you only listening of matter, not yet mind. So if you listen only matter and exclude mind, you never will achieve nibbana also. So you have to check yourself. When you're practicing vipassana, is your object conventional truth or ultimate realities? If your object is conventional truth, then nibbana is far away from you. So you have to make effort to go to discern ultimate realities. So nowadays many people say vipassana, but they only concentrate on conventional truth, not ultimate realities. Okay, so far any question? We have go through roughly the fourfold ultimate truth. Is there any question? Now we come to the most interesting part. This thought process. This very relevant to your daily life. So it's very important. Before we understand thought process, it's better we understand bhavanga first. Everybody heard about bhavanga or life continuum. What's the meaning of bhavanga? Bhavanga is a combination of two words. Bhava, anga. Bhava is existent. Anga is factor. So bhavanga means factor of existence. And bhavanga is the function of consciousness by which the continuity of the individual is preserved through the duration of any single existence from conception to death. So bhavanga is the function of consciousness by which the continuity of the individual existence individual is preserved through the duration of any single existence from conception to death. So its function is to preserve the continuity of the individual existence. So it is an indispensable condition of existence. And Bhavanga arise and pass away every moment during life whenever there is no active connective process. As I have said, mind cannot stop. The mind keep on arising and passing away, flows like a stream, cannot stop. So when there's no connective process, when there's no sound, no visible form, no taste, no tongue, no taste, no smell, no tangible object, no connective object, no connective process or no thought process, then Bhavanga will flow on like a stream to preserve the existence. Because mind cannot stop. So Bhavanga has to arise, pass, and away to preserve the continuity of existence. So you understand what's Bhavanga? Then Bhavanga takes the past life object as object. So you cannot see your Bhavanga. But because Bhavanga take past life object as object, we cannot see our past life, so we cannot see the object of Bhavanga. So when people come to meditation, for example you practice anapana, when your concentration, when your mind is very quiet, very quiet, then, but because of lacking of mindfulness, what is mindfulness? I mean you forget the object. Suddenly your mind is very quiet. Then because of lacking of mindfulness, you forget the object. At that time, your mind go into Bhavanga. Like sleeping state. So because you cannot see the object of Bhavanga, you think there's nothing. There's nothing inside. There's no mind and matter inside. So many people when experience this stage, they say they reach Nibbana. So there's mind falling into Bhavanga. I think many people have experienced it. So when you practice anapana or whatever is when the mindfulness is weak, then you forget the object. But the concentration is still good. So like very quiet, peaceful, but do not anything. At that time the mind fall into Bhavanga. Okay. Then Bhavanga, when you dreamless sleep, at the state of dreamless sleep, the Bhavanga flows, arise and pass away. In every moment. And also among the two connective process, one connective process or one top process finished. Before another thought process arise, Bhavanga must arise in between. Okay. So roughly you understand what's Bhavanga. Okay, understand Bhavanga, we can now thought process. When the mind, when the sound impinge the ear sensitivity and Bhavanga here, when the sound impinge ear sensitivity and Bhavanga here, a thought process consists of 17 thought moments arise and pass away in order to apprehend the sound. Once again, when the sound impinge the ear sensitivity and Bhavanga here together simultaneously, a thought process consists of 17 thought moments arise and pass away in order to apprehend the sound. Okay, so what are the 17 thought moments? Let us see. Number one is called past Bhavanga. So the moment the sound impinge the ear sensitivity and Bhavanga, one Bhavanga arise and pass away. We call past Bhavanga. The second one, because of the impingement of the sound to the Bhavanga, so Bhavanga start to vibrate. Okay? Then after vibrate, Bhavanga had to stop in order to give way to the thought process. So Bhavanga stop. We call arrest Bhavanga. Number three. arrest Bhavanga. Then after Bhavanga stop, then one consciousness arise, called five door averting consciousness, turning to the sound. We call five door averting consciousness, turning to the sound. Turning to the object, still don't know what's that. If it is sound, then followed by another consciousness, that's ear consciousness. If it is visible form, it's eye consciousness. If it is smell, then nose consciousness, depend on the object. Ear consciousness will arise and pass away, followed by receiving consciousness, receiving the sound, and pass away, followed by investigating consciousness, investigate the sound, then pass away, another consciousness arise called determine, oh, this sound. After this, come into the most important stage, that's jhavana. What's the meaning of jhavana? Jhavana means run very swiftly towards the object. So you can see other consciousness arise one time, pass away, arise one time, pass away. But jhavana arise seven times. Seven jhavana. So if you get irritated by the sound, then unwholesome consciousness will arise. That's jhavana. Then karma is performed at this stage. Unwholesome karma is performed at this stage. So jhavana is the most important because it involves wholesome karma and unwholesome karma. And if you take delight in the sound, then unwholesome consciousness rooted in greed will arise and pass away for seven times. If you experience the taste, so many jhavana consciousness rooted in greed will arise and pass away for seven times. After seven times, jhavana followed by two consciousness called registering consciousness. Then finish one thought moment. Finish one process. Why? Because the lifespan of the sound finished already. As I have said, the lifespan of object equal to 17 moment of consciousness. So 17 moment of consciousness finished because the lifespan of object already finished. Followed by Bhavanga. Because between two top process, Bhavanga must arise. Then followed by mind, after five door top process, followed by mind door top process. My daughter process still taking that object, taking the sound. Already sound already passed away. Although already passed away, it take the past object, sound object. Then my daughter process arise many times. Okay. Now I want only after arise many times you know clearly. Oh, this is the sound. What's the meaning of the sound? Only after many times of my daughter process, then the sound become clear to you. For the beginning, the sound is still not clear. Okay, now we come to the jhavana. What's the importance of this jhavana? For example, you enjoying your taste, the taste of the food for 5 minutes. So jhavana arise how many times? Okay, seven times. One thought process seven times. One snap of finger, thousands of millions of consciousness arise and pass away. So 5 minutes, how many thousand billions? Uncountable. Cannot, I don't know how to count. So, when you partake your food, you enjoy the taste of food for 5 minutes, that consciousness rooted in greed arise more than thousand billions of times. The consciousness rooted in greed. And each jhavana can produce its result either in present life or life after. The first jhavana, for example, within the seven jhavana, the first one is the weakest one. the weakest one. So this first jhana generates the karma. We call immediately effective karma. The first jhana generates karma. We call immediately effective karma, which will produce its effect in the present life. So the effect in present life is not so serious, you know. And the seventh jhana, number seven, is the second weakest. Why? Because the force already fallen. The force of the karmic force already go down. So become the second weakest. And this jhana produce subsequently effective karma. When this karma ripen, it will produce its effect in the immediately future life. And in the middle, number two, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth jhana. In the middle, the five jhanas in the middle generate the karma, generate indefinitely effective karma, which will produce its effect along the samsara up to the achievement of parinibbana. So this one is more powerful and more serious. For example, Monggalana, you know, Monggalana, the left hand disciple of Buddha, during one of his past lives, he beat his blind parent almost to death. This karma is performed by all these seven jhana. You see, he beat his parent almost to death for how long? I think 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, for example 20 minutes. So one snap of finger, 1,000 billions of consciousness arise. So 30 minutes, 20 minutes, how many consciousness arise? Rooted in anger. You beat her parent, is rooted in anger. So how many consciousness rooted in anger arise and pass away?
Countless.
And each jhana, one jhana, countless consciousness, each jhana can produce its result along the samsara up to the attainment of parinibbana. So how bad karma he has performed. That's why after his death, he was reborn in hell continuously for 200 lifetimes in hell. After he came out from hell, he was reborn as human beings. Every time before that take place, his skull, I think, was bitten up to tiny green because of his past karma. And because this past karma is generated by the jhavana, second jhavana, third jhavana, fourth jhavana, fifth jhavana, sixth jhavana. Up to he become arahant. When he become arahant, he has psychic power, foremost in psychic power. And yet, he cannot escape from this past karma. So when 500 robbers came and attacked him, he lost all his psychic power. He cannot run away. He cannot fly away. He lost all his psychic power. And he was bitten almost to death. And finally he died. Because of this jhavana, this karma. So why? So now you understand. One action you perform, whether good or bad, no? If in the five jhana in between, it can produce, only one time you perform, it can produce countless effects along the samsara. Because in one snap of finger, thousands of billions of consciousness runs pass away. Each jhana can produce its effect. Each jhana can produce its effect. Countless jhana, so countless effect. That's why we have to understanding how the mind works. We have to try our best to avoid unwholesome consciousness to arise. Because all the unwholesome consciousness will produce its bad effect in the future until we become Arahant. Only one small action will produce countless effects. So also, a good action you have performed can produce countless good effects in your future. Same, bad action and good action, same. Okay, so far any question? Okay, next we go to the near-death thought process. For everybody, when near-death moment, for everybody except Arahant, one of the three signs will appear during their near-death. What are the three? Number one is karma. Number two is sign of karma. Number three is sign of destination. So if karma arises during near-death moment, what it arises? For example, you offer flower to the Buddha image in 5 years ago, you know. So during near-death moment, if this karma is going to produce its result in the future, it's going to produce rebirth consciousness in the future, then you, once again, you will see you yourself offering the flower to the Buddha. This image will appear again during near-death moment. If this image appears again, then this is called karma. Then sign of karma, for example, you for example, you're offering the flower to the Buddha image, and this karma is going to produce rebirth consciousness in the future. Then during near-death moment, the flower appear. This is called sign of karma. It means that the instrument you use to perform the karma, the flower you use or candle you use. So this is different from karma. The instrumental you use to perform karma. For patient, you know, for doctor who treat the patient, maybe it appear strength or patience. The instrument he used to perform that karma. It's called the sign of karma. Number three, the sign of destination. The sign of destination will appear red color. If you are going to reborn in mother's womb, then red color will appear. If you are going to reborn as a monkey in the forest, then you will see the forest. And if you are going to reborn as a hell, then you will see the fire. This one is called the sign of destination to show that where you are going to reborn. So one of these three will appear during near-death moment. Why it appear? Why? Because of the past karma which is going to produce rebirth consciousness. That's why it appear during near-death thought moment. Okay. So when it appear, so the near-death thought process arise, taking that as object. For example, taking that flower as object. Near that top moment arise, taking that flower as object. So here the top moment only 13, you count only 13. Then the lifespan of that rupa is 17 top moment. So another 4. Okay? Another 4 top moment. Then after jhavana thought process, you can see the 5 jhavana. During near that thought moment, jhavana runs only 5 times, not 7 times, because of the weakness of the heart base. So jhavana only runs 5 times, not like usual 7 times. So after that, death consciousness arises. Death consciousness arises, so the lifespan of the matter 14. Okay, immediately death consciousness, rebirth consciousness arrives without any interruption. So rebirth consciousness also taking this flower, past life flower as object. and the life after rebirth consciousness, then Bhavanga arise. Bhavanga also take this flower, past life flower as object. Then the lifespan of the flower, this matter, exhausted already. This is how the past link to the present. And after rebirth consciousness arise and pass away, then Bhavanga arise and pass away for 16 times. Immediately it passed away, then the first thought process in the very conception arise. This thought process is craving for existence. For everybody, although you are Arya, you know, for ordinary person, for Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, the first thought process is craving for existence. Even you are born in hell beings, you are still crave for existence. This is a very top process in one's lifetime. Then the consciousness continuing flow. When the top process arises, then Bhavanga cease. When there's no top process, Bhavanga arise and pass away, preserve, maintain the continuity of existence. And the continual of coming into existence of consciousness, mental factors and matter is called the round of rebirth or samsara. The continual of coming into existence of consciousness, mental factors and matter in cessation is called the round of rebirth or samsara. This is how the samsara turns like a wheel. Any question?